Welcome to episode 18 of the Over the Counter Podcast. I'm Mark Giesecheck.
And I'm Andrew Whaley.
Today we're going to talk about virtual reality, which is kind of interesting because we're conveying this to you via electronic medium, which is a little virtual in and of itself.
Are you hearing us? Are you just hearing the sounds your machine is making?
If a tree falls in the wood... Does it make a sound if no one's there to hear it?
Oh, is this like if a man speaking in the wood and there's no wife there to hear him, is he wrong? I'm a single guy. I can get away with that. Mark, notice how Mark is making no comment. Today's going to be kind of fun because we had our usual conversation slash argument. It was a very friendly one this time around about what we're going to talk about. And we always throw ideas out back and forth until one of them sounds good to both of us. And so we're kind of winging this one. So we just kind of want to let you inside on our process to a certain extent. So, yeah.
We're into the craft.
Into the craft. See, we had a fight about it. He doesn't like the use of the word craft.
I can express my own opinions. I don't need you to express them for me.
You're going to make them sound less crazy than they are, though. I backed you into a serious philosophical corner.
I don't think the word craft should be used to describe things like writing. I think it just sounds weird.
Yeah, but you said that it both
sounds too low and too high at the same time. It's ridiculous. It sounds like writing is the same as, like, I don't know.
Toilet making, you said.
Yeah, or putting logs through a wood chipper or something.
But yeah, you said it made them sound like they were taking themselves too seriously.
And it does make them sound like they're taking themselves
too
seriously.
In kind of a false man of the people, like my craft.
Yeah,
like,
sort of.
Like, I make something the way you make a house. Make a book.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah, kind of like that. It's like a...
It is exactly like that. I write, and I think you're...
I don't even know how to say it, right?
What's so funny is you're like a student of the craft of writing, though. You're like all about writing.
I don't think it should be called a craft, though. It bothers the heck out of me.
And this is a different... Okay, I wanted to do a podcast about how we relate to the definitions of words, and he didn't. So next time around, we're going to bring craft up.
We're supposed to be talking about virtual reality.
Okay, virtual reality.
So there are a whole lot of things that have brought virtual reality into the popular consciousness. I did a little Google search on, or not a Google search, an IMDb search on virtual reality. There's something like 267 movies that have to do with virtual reality. People are fascinated by this. And yeah. I think it goes back to all these philosophical things and the cave analogy of Plato and all of this. But maybe we can start by asking, like, why are people fascinated by virtual reality? What is it that makes them want to read novel after novel and watch movie after movie that have to do with the concept of virtual reality? What is it?
Well, I think the reason they want to watch TV at all or watch novels or read novels at all is that I think they're bored.
So it's an escape.
I think that, yeah.
Right, you could read novels about, I don't know, the Old West or
They do all that. But when they read a novel about virtual reality, they're reading a novel about why they're bored and reading a novel, so to speak. You know,
that's really creepy.
We're sick of our life. We're disengaged. We're not engaged in reality, really, and so we don't see. We don't see the real and experience the real anymore. We're surrounded by plastic and all this weird stuff and just this pop culture and stupidity and boring stuff that just takes time. Like, I sat for an hour at Comcast waiting to just pick up a stupid box so that I can have the inner tubes in my house, the interwebs in the air in my house. You know.
Wait. Comcast sells tires?
the inner tubes. That's a series of tubes.
Comcast is probably worse than going to the DMV.
Ugh. I mean, yeah, so it's like we're all in line. We're online or in a queue. Well, so let's become
you know, it's probably the function of the over automation or over mechanization of our lives, right? Or the over databaseization. It drives me crazy how everything in our lives is in a database somewhere, right? And when you call a customer service representative at any company to do anything for you, what they're doing is interacting with the database on your behalf. That's all they're doing. They don't even know how to talk to you as if you're a person. They actually have a computer screen telling them what to say to you.
Exactly.
And then they click things to learn the next line you're supposed to say.
I was looking for the Comcast office over in Aurora. The sign was on the road. I turned into the shopping center where it's at. I just need to know where it's at because it's kind of a labyrinth and I'm just trying to find this. Their local Denver number is listed on Google Maps. I click on it. I call them. It goes to Comcast International Automation. I ended up having to, and this is horrible to admit, here's the hack of the day, right? If you want to get through customer service automation, voice recognition software, make sure your kids aren't listening. Cuss.
What?
Just scream cuss words into the phone. They're all geared to recognize that as someone who is frustrated and about to give up, and so they'll put you through to someone.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, so I started cussing at the robot on the other end of the Comcast line, and then the robot said, well, put in your the account numbers, social security number, the last four digits. I'm like, I just want to know, is it over here or over? I'm right here. I'm at your store. And then you get inside and you have
human
beings.
We don't need to dwell on your personal frustration for the entire podcast. We need to talk about why people are obsessed with virtual reality. Let's just talk about a couple virtual reality pop culture items that have been really important. I think the most important one was probably The Matrix.
It's huge.
Right? There was another sci-fi movie done just a couple years ago called Inception that was really popular.
Which is so great because in Fort Collins on Mason Street, right in front of Everyday Joe's Coffee House, there's a train that runs down Mason Street through the middle of town. And it's just like, I remember one day, I just took a picture of it out the window and put it on Facebook, and all the people who have never been to Fort Collins were like, dude, is that Inception? What are you doing? No, there actually is a train that comes right down the street in the middle of Fort Collins. It's spectacular. But another one I think that's really interesting, kind of like The Matrix, that was, it's a longer ago, it's a good film, is I think it's called Strange Days. Maybe it's Daniel Day-Lewis, I think. I think that, I remember there's an old bit. I remember who else it was a stand-up. Anyway, I think people are absolutely sick of their lives and they're sick of themselves. And if I know that I've never been anywhere that I'm not. Every time I go to the museum, there I am, showing up, making that stupid joke that I make. And with virtual reality, is the closest thing you can do to getting outside of yourself.
Okay, so let's
and
talk
people,
about...
And that's why people get drunk. That's why people do drugs. That's why you want to get out.
It's a kind of escape.
I think it's an escape, yeah.
So it's an escape from reality into something that isn't reality, that feels sort of like reality. It's virtual. So let's just talk about a few
but
examples.
But you still have control.
So you can sort of engage in virtual reality inhabitation or whatever you want to call it by watching movies or television, right, by playing video games. That's probably the biggest one, right? In terms of people getting sucked in, getting addicted to a reality that isn't real.
And the idea behind VR is they're trying to make it more and more real, more and more like...
Right. But there are ways of imaginatively entering virtual reality by, say, for example, reading romance novels or whatever, nice, right? So people read tons of novels or they watch tons of television or tons of movies in order to disengage and escape and get into this non-real reality.
You know, he hit something huge right there. I read a book about how to start a used bookstore once, and all these little used bookstores that you see, and you wonder, how do they survive? Their business model, they tell you, you have to find within the perimeter of your shop, there's roughly 50 to 100 ladies that have to have a new romance novel every week.
Wow.
And so they just burn through them. They're addicted to them the way like people are addicted to porn or something. Like they constantly read these romance novels, one right after another, and they always have to be working on one. And so they come in, and you can buy them back for like 50 cents and then charge them $3 for the next one. And they just recycle them, and that's how they stay in business.
Okay, so I mean, we're all familiar with things like this, people being addicted to things like romance novels or video games or television or movies or... worse, drugs,
right,
you know, alcohol, you know, whatever. But virtual reality, the way we're using it or the way that, you know, people use it in the media, is trying to take an experience of something like a novel or a movie to a new level.
Right.
Where you actually enter into this so-called virtual world.
The ultimate would be The Matrix, right?
Right.
You could live in it for years. That's the place that has the good noodles, he says, when they drive by his favorite noodle restaurant after he's back in The Matrix. I mean, he's got preferences on this virtual noodles because he didn't know they were virtual. I mean, it's so real, you could think you're in it.
You can smell it, you can taste it, you can hear it, you can see it, you can feel it. The whole thing is an experience. Okay, so So how far have we gotten in virtual reality technology? Not very far, but let's give a couple examples. So some of the early attempts at virtual reality have to do with, you know, basically wearing a kind of goggle-like screen thing that, where you can see things happening. So instead of looking at a screen that's on a wall or whatever, you're looking at a screen that's on your face.
Right.
Then we have in-between technologies like Google Glass, which they refer to not as virtual reality, but as augmented reality.
See, I think augmented reality is the thing that's going to be more effective, but that's another podcast. Well, augmented reality is huge.
Okay,
you're going to be able to look at a restaurant, and if you've got it engaged, how many stars it has will pop up in the corner of your eye, and you can scroll down the reviews with your voice, like while you're walking the sidewalk.
Right.
You know,
you can already do that with Google Glass.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
You can do that now.
Yeah, I'm saying that augmented reality, and you can see who's nearby, and the army is using that same thing.
And you can
do
it with your phone, too, and with Google goggles, right? Point your phone at something, and it'll give you all that information.
Okay,
right?
when we were in Europe, and you were down in Rome, and I was in Vienna, I downloaded this little thing for my iPhone.
It's like Google goggles?
It's kind of like that, but you download different languages, and you look at the menu or something through the screen, and it translates for you.
Crazy, crazy.
And I literally figured out something was deer or venison.
So a lot of the technologies that are emerging right now are augmented reality technologies. I want to get to the virtual reality technologies.
Okay.
So one of the biggest companies in virtual reality is called Oculus Rift. Have you heard of the company?
Yeah, yeah.
Oculus Rift just got bought out by Facebook in the past year or two.
Right? Oh,
Facebook's buying everything.
Wow, yeah.
But what I was really curious about in this regard, so Oculus Rift makes one of these basically a headset type thing that's a monitor where you can like turn your head and you're still looking around inside the so-called virtual world.
Right.
And it's mainly designed for gaming technology. And there are a couple other companies that are making these kinds of visual devices, right? Mm-hmm. A screen you wear on your face. Google just came out with something called Google Cardboard. Have you heard of this?
No.
Where you take your smartphone and you put it into this cardboard device that they make that's basically free, and then you can wear your smartphone as if it's a virtual reality headset.
That's insane.
It is insane, but apparently it works, and it feeds different 3D images to your two eyes or whatever. I don't know how it works, but you can go look it up.
It sounds
like something from The Onion, but apparently it really happens or really exists. Okay, but what I was curious about is if Facebook owns the best virtual reality technology now, can you imagine if Facebook comes out with, like, the Facebook virtual world, right, where you can buy a Facebook headset and you put it on and you can enter into this so-called Facebook world where you walk into a room and all of your friends are there, all of your Facebook friends are there. Right? And you can walk around having conversations with your Facebook friends. You can sit down and play a game of chess with one of your Facebook friends. You can look into their eyes or the eyes of their avatar or whatever in this virtual world. Right? And their virtual avatar looks like them, right? It's got their face on it and the lips move and the eyes blink and all of that kind of stuff.
You know, I might sign up for that.
Right?
It'd be nice to see some of my old friends
how people can get addicted to Facebook, right? Spend hours and hours on it, posting things or whatever. Well, can you imagine if you could go and inhabit this virtual world where all of your friends are?
Or what if...
And have conversations you can talk to people, you can hear people.
I'm less worried about that because at least then it is some form of community. It's false in the sense of it's not physical, and it's still just a more detailed representation of a digital community. What I'm worried about is the guy that's already been sitting around his mom's basement playing World of Warcraft for a month and a half without leaving. What's it going to be like when he can actually look 3D and be an elf and run around in this world?
Exactly.
I mean, in the words of Dennis Miller, when they come out with this, it's going to make cocaine look like Tic Tacs. It's like,
yeah.
I mean, it's literally, that's going to be, I mean, and that's the...
Right, so look, I mean, let's talk about some examples that have already existed. There's this thing called Second Life on the internet that is basically a so-called virtual world where you have a little 3D avatar that walks around in this little world, and you can...
My friend David Allen is good friends with the founder, and he was a big supporter of it at one point.
And, but, you know, it's been kind of an experiment thing. It didn't really catch on.
Yeah, I never played with it.
Only, I don't know, maybe a million or two users. You know, it's not...
And there were, you could do advertisements, like you're walking through this world, and there's a billboard, and you could, like, have branded experiences.
Right.
There was a lot of hope for it.
There are some universities that hold classes in Second Life, which I think is really weird, but it does happen. But I mean, imagine if, I mean, Facebook has what, 100 million users or a billion users or whatever, I don't know, has a gazillion users. Can you imagine if, well, let's just say, for example, they sent every single Facebook user a Facebook virtual reality headset for free?
I mean, it would literally...
As part of their business model.
It would change...
Right, and right now, I mean, they already bought a company that does, what do you call it, internet connection via hot air balloon or whatever, or drones.
Yeah.
Right, so they're trying to make internet connection across the world ubiquitous in every country so that every person can have a device or whatever that's connected to the internet at all times. And then imagine if you could do that in this kind of virtual reality kind of way. I guess what I'm thinking of are these people who are addicted to Facebook basically living in Facebook rather than in the real world.
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, I go through phases, and I've just now in the last week, I was trying to kind of pull back a little bit. This guy, I got a big flame war on Facebook, and I was like, I'm just kind of done with this for a while. And, man, I tell you what, if I see that little... I had to turn notifications off, because if I see that little number of people that have tried to... Someone posted something to my wall. One of my friends, possibly here in Denver... In fact, I had someone posted something to my wall earlier. An article from Ethica Politica about contraception. And it was a friend of mine from Denver. And so it's not like it's completely separate. I mean, I see this person. We have dinner. But she's like, y'all, you'll like this. We were talking about this at Wings the other night. Boom, you know. So it's real community in a sense. And now the question is it different if that person's in Chicago? I mean...
Okay, so let's take this to even the next level. So Facebook could turn into a virtual reality type system, but you could also have fictitious worlds, right? So virtual reality technology begins with video games, but then it can go to other things. So in that movie, Inception... Right, there are these elderly people that are very sick that do the shared dreaming thing in Inception. Right, so in the movie Inception, if you haven't seen it, right, you can share dreams with other people using this technology. So, and when you share a dream, like 1 hour in the real world is like a couple days in the dream world. So these people go and do the shared dreaming thing together for 3 or 4 hours a day. So those 3 or 4 hours are basically like a week of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so then one of the characters asks the question, okay, so which is their reality? Is it the real reality where they're an elderly, sick person, or is it the reality they experience more time in, which is this virtual world of dreaming, shared dreaming, where they can live
and
out their
fantasies? Here's where it gets interesting. Because, as I said before, this was the big fight. The college I went to was a great book school, and the whole big thing came to a head in junior senior year seminar. And the question is, in the modern world, in the modern philosophers and the idealists and all this, about like, do we experience the things themselves? Do we experience our experience of those things? You know, are we in the matrix, basically? But what's funny though is that problem that you just set out. All of us over here on the Western philosophical, Catholic, Thomist defense of reality side, we're going to be put in the weird situation of saying, no, that's the old sick world is more real because it's made out of matter and energy. And then someone else could say, wait a minute, I thought you thought that the real world was spirit and that angels have being and the most important things don't have matter or energy. He's like incorporeal souls and stuff like that. So we're in this weird situation of having to defend the corporeal as more real than the non-corporeal because we want to be anchored in reality. It's like, right. So that's kind of a weird, you know, philosophy and pop culture make strange bedfellows there, you know?
So let's say that something much better than Second Life emerges,
yeah.
Right? And you can wear a virtual reality headset and live in this.
It's the holodeck world. From Star Trek.
It's like the holodeck from Star Trek. Or have you ever seen this movie called Surrogates with Bruce Willis?
Yes, that was a really strange commentary on it.
Right, where people have these like robots that they can custom design to look beautiful or whatever, or have, you know, extra strength or whatever. And then rather than going about their daily lives personally, they sit in these like virtual reality chairs that are hooked into a network that then talks to their robot, and their robot lives their life for them, and they just
and that kind of gets into Avatar. Too, and the living is something other than yourself, which is kind right. of our virtual World of Warcraft we talked about right. a while ago.
Yeah.
Now I think
it gets very Star Trek-y.
Now I think here's something really interesting. I think that the difference between the Matrix is, as he says in the movie, the Matrix has you, right? Whereas in the holodeck, you have the Matrix.
If you don't know what he's talking about, it's in Star Trek.
Right, yeah, Star Trek, yeah. It's a room you can enter into, you could say, and you can get a program, and you could, like...
It's a virtual reality.
And they're out in space for a long time. A lot of them have virtual worlds that look like the farm they grew up on, so they can go walk down to the stream and do whatever, or they might fight or something, you know, but it's real. It feels real, it acts real, you know. You can get a bruise, you know. And so... But now I think here's something that I think really feeds into this, is because this is all technology... And we touched a little bit on how we do this to ourselves through imagination in watching movies and reading novels. Do you know anything about, have you read anything about, what do they call it? Lucid dreaming. It's, there's a thing, and evidently you can train yourself to do this, where you're dreaming, but you know you're dreaming.
Yeah.
And so, but you, it's kind of like the Matrix. It's slippery and it's fuzzy in places and all that. But you can, there are supposedly, I don't know that this is true, people who can go into, they can look at a piece of music that they're going to perform. Like Colleen, you know, look at a piece of music she has to perform this weekend. Really look it over good. Get it in, a picture of it in her head. And then go to sleep and then go into this, train herself to go in this dream state. And then, she's standing there in her practice room, beautiful wood, everything, perfect acoustics, and there's that work on the stand in front of her, and she could spend the equivalent of weeks practicing that and then wake up and be able to sing it perfectly.
See, that seems like science fiction to me.
But there are whole communities online. There was a great movie with Danny DeVito in a what was it? It was about lucid dreaming. Oh, what was that movie called? I'll have to look it up. Danny DeVito, lucid dreaming...
Okay, we'll figure that out.
Anyway, there's one where you've got the Matrix and it's not technology, and I mean that's attractive to me as an idea. But the weird thing is that you could do anything, and if you don't kind of have full control of your will, it could become addictive in kind of a dark way, because you know maybe you want to like start fantasizing about sin or you know doing some kind of tempting thing, but you don't have your will fully engaged because you're asleep. That could be a very dark place for your soul if you're not careful. Or God knows what you're opening yourself up to in the non-matter, non-energy world.
Right.
You know, it's like, but...
Well, like the shared dreaming concept in Inception.
Yeah, I think...
Right, if that were possible.
I mean, that would be, if that were possible, it would be... I remember, have you ever had a dream that was a very long dream that was very, very realistic, and when you woke up, you were actually confused for a little bit?
Oh, yeah, right? Of course. Of course, especially when something happens in the dream that affects your life, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, I remember,
and or causes fear, you know, and you wake up thinking, oh my gosh, did that really happen?
Oh yeah, I mean, you always have the panic dreams like that, and like the something wrong at work dreams, you overslept dream. I was kept waking up last night thinking that I forgot to put the order in for the food for the cafe today because we have a bunch of people on site tomorrow for the filming, right? And I was worried about that. So I got up, set a timer to remind me, and then I was able to go to sleep. But I've experienced to a certain extent the lucid dreaming thing. I always skateboard when I do lucid dreaming. And if I ever realize, hey, I'm in a dream, immediately I go skate like I did when I was a kid. But I remember having a dream when I was in high school about us winning, me and my mom winning the lottery. Now, you know, we were a single mom, not much money. I get it. That makes sense, right? But it was like, okay, we did. Okay, news cameras. Okay, we had to meet with a lawyer. Our friend who's a lawyer comes over. All the mundane crap about what this means. Shopping for a new car. Hey, because my car was kind of broken. I got a new car. All the stuff. I mean, it was weeks in the dream. All the little details about, like, well, are we going to stay here? No, we should buy a new house. Should we wait until the rest of the money comes in? All the little decisions and all that. And I woke up in my room and was confused because the room didn't have that thing on the wall that I'd bought. And I went outside and my old car was still in the driveway. And I mean, it was about a good 5 minutes before I figured out what had happened, because it was so long and it was so mundane. Yeah, so, you know,
I think, you know, that kind of experience is going to be more common, right, when people start participating in these virtual realities more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Right, where you end up spending more time and more energy and more thought and more of yourself in a virtual world rather than in the real world. I mean, imagine, right, I could see this happening in the very near future. We already have people who telecommute. Yeah. Can you imagine if you have whole companies of virtual workers? Right, where instead of having a building and an office and a copy machine and whatever else, you all inhabit this virtual world and a virtual office building. You wake up every morning, and to go to work, you put your virtual reality headset on and you spend 8 hours in a virtual world.
Even in the Matrix, you have to go to the cubicle.
Right.
I mean, that would be hell. I mean, at least hopefully we would all get nice corner offices. I mean, because there's no limit to them. But then they would use that to get you. Because you'd have to earn the good office with your sales. And when you reach your goal the rest of the month, you'd have the good office or whatever. Because all they'd have to do is just change a line of code and you'd have the good office.
Exactly.
Dude, that's dark and weird. And no, that's a movie waiting to happen.
But I mean, this is the kind of stuff that's already beginning to
happen. It's like the Matrix office space.
If you think of digital products in general, like ebooks and electronically purchased music or whatever, you don't really own that. You're paying for the right to use that stuff until you die. And then it's gone. Right, you can't pass on your iTunes collection to your children, for example.
You can't?
No, it's illegal. No, once you die, the contract is over, and you no longer have any rights over that stuff that you have supposedly purchased.
What about spouses?
I don't think you can give it to your spouse. I'm not sure about that, but you could read the details of the iTunes contract.
That's weird, because it's like I thought about this the other day because I've got, like, right now you normally have a book or two in my bag. I just have my Kindle in my bag right now because I had something heavy to put into it, right? And I'm reading Mark Thibodeau's book right now, and it's like it's on my – that's where I bought it at, right? So it's like, do I own that?
No, you don't.
I don't. I just have access
to it. You are paying for access. You are not paying for the thing itself. So – but this will be the same thing with virtual reality systems, right? Let's just say you work for one of these so-called virtual companies in a virtual office building. To go to work, you put on your virtual reality headset. So then in the evening, what are you going to do for your entertainment?
Right.
Are you going to go back into a virtual world, right, in order to – entertain yourself with, I don't know what you're going to do there, right? Go to the cabana on the tropical island.
It's amazing how much Patton Oswalt shows up on our podcast. he's got a great idea where it's like, you know, he's like, we're starting to live more and more in these crazy virtual worlds, and indie filmmakers even are making these crazy special effects movies, and pretty soon there's like it's going to all flip and they're going to make, you know, real crazy stuff is going to be like, you know, oh, guy gets up, makes a cup of coffee, goes down to the corner, buys a banana at the bodega. It's going to be crazy stuff. And it's like, that's not real life. Where's the werewolves? Where's the vampires? And there wasn't any aliens or explosion. That's what real life's about, man. It's like it's all going to flip on us, you know?
Yeah.
So a guy's going to be a wizard that explode stuff all day long for a living, then he's going to come home and his idea of entertainment is going to be turning on the TV and watching two people talk about whether they want Chinese or not. Yeah. It's like, no, but this is real life, man.
That's
like,
exactly what we're talking about, right? Is that the virtual reality world could end up becoming more real, so to speak, to us in a kind of existential way than the real world,
right?
And that this is serious danger that we don't really even know what that looks like or what the ethical problems, if you will be with that. We don't even understand that.
Well, and here this brings us full circle back to where we started, or you referenced it, and that is the role of community. I should write a blog on this, like community in the cave, because it's like because Plato has a guy in the cave. He's in a theater, basically.
Yeah.
Fire behind him. Right. They're passing the things right in front of the fire.
A movie theater.
He's in a movie theater, basically. A primitive one with fire and cutouts. And he doesn't know. And he can't turn around. And he can't unfree himself. He doesn't even really know he's locked, right?
Yeah.
And Plato says, if someone should free him. So there's a question. If the best picture of it is the Matrix, and the Matrix has you, if we go so far into the having the Matrix that we end up where the Matrix has us,
right?
Then what scares me is if you can live on, live on disability or whatever, find some way to survive in your mom's basement and just sit with the virtual reality on and just be a wizard all day long, and you're cut yourself off from all non-virtual community. People do this now. They just sit at home. Right. And for whatever reason, maybe they're sick or something, and they spend all day online. If you don't have someone that can reach out and grab you and go, no, come on, we're going to go get a cup of coffee.
Like
a real coffee. Right. And they're like, ooh, out in Meat World? And it's like, in Meat World. We're going to go to
another
Meat World.
Ethical question that I think really will arise with this, it has to do with imprisonment and the ethics of punishment. And so supposedly there's...
We need to talk about this sometime.
Yeah, we'll devote a whole podcast to this. But just to raise the question, supposedly they might be able to use virtual reality systems to punish people in such a way that time is accelerated or whatever. So they experience 5 years of imprisonment in the space of, say, a month.
It was a Star Trek.
It's a Star Trek episode, right?
They did that with Picard.
But there was an article in a real newspaper about this just a few months ago about how the technology might become available in the next 5 or 10 years.
That is so weird.
Right?
So the killer goes in. You make him do 80 years. He comes out. It's 3 years later. Then you have to sell society on the fact that he's paid his debt.
Right.
Because he experienced 80 years.
Right, but think of the ethical implications.
Oh, that's just nuts.
Right, so, if they were able to develop that technology and somebody did a really heinous crime and got 1,000 years in prison, they might be able to actually make that person experience what 1,000 years in prison would feel like.
You know what's interesting about... You know what this sounds
right,
like?
Is that ethical?
No, and what's weird about this is that it's so funny how many times when we start getting over into the technological... And the way that the technological effect can affect consciousness and experience, how so close to or analogous to the spiritual we get. I mean, think about how this sounds crazy, right? But the big thing that everyone freaks out about von Balthasar about is his take on Holy Saturday, right? And he says that he claims that Christ went to the hell of the damned, right? But he says that he was outside of time. So he experienced eternity in hell, right? So he experienced. So think about that. That's just insane. If you could actually make someone experience 100,000 years, and they actually experience that, there's the. I don't know. It's like it's just. I mean, I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's possible. But the implications. What I'm more scared about is the torture that would happen from them trying.
Right.
Right. I mean, who are the people that they work on this with?
Yeah.
I'm more worried about that. But I think it's there's the big question is like we have to I love the idea of I mean on the very simple level, virtual reality, a movie is virtual reality. I love the idea someone can tell me a story and use that way that I see pictures in reality to show me something that I can't see because buildings don't blow up like that.
And I mean, I like the idea of video phone calls like Skype, right? That was something that was in science fiction back in the 60s and 70s, and now is reality.
The Jetsons.
Right, everybody can make video phone calls now, no problem, with your iPhone or whatever.
And there's a question, what is it about that? Because I will Skype, I'll usually use FaceTime because I have Apple stuff, and I'll talk to a couple of my friends, a lot of my friends, but then there's one or two of my friends that they will call me and go, hey, do you want to FaceTime?
Right.
Because it's like, well, hold on, let me put a better shirt on or something. It's like, you know,
but
you see them and it means something.
This is
more.
Why like a virtual reality Facebook would be attractive, right? Where you could go have say maybe a 3D video call with another person.
I would probably sign up for
right?
it. I probably would.
Right, but then, you know, we run the risk of virtual reality beginning to trump reality. So
right.
Anyway, I think that at this point we have come full circle in our discussion of virtual reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that our discussion is virtually at an end.
It's literally at an end. So now is the time on the podcast when we say, go, Mark.
This has been another episode of the Over the Counter Podcast. I'm Mark Eastcheck.
And I am virtually Andrew Whaley.